Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, continuing with our ongoing in-depth investigative reporting series, AIDS, A Second Opinion, Deconstructing the Myth of HIV and AIDS. Normally, at this time on this program, I would be interviewing individuals who've made positive changes in their lives. But because I've been out on the road for the last 4 days doing an in-depth fundraising effort on behalf of PBS in Detroit and Washington and Atlanta and Chattanooga and Charlotte, South Carolina, and all over the place, I have not had a chance to speak with anyone, so I'm going to continue what would be a program I would do later in the week, so I'm simply moving it up to do it now, and then later on this week, I'll be doing what would be today's normal program. Let's begin by taking a look at some of the latest in the world in this discussion on AIDS. And I might mention that where there have been no major cracks in the wall of the orthodox medical, scientific, or media coverage on AIDS, there are more and more dissidents coming forward who have taken the time to review the literature and information and saying, possibly we should re-examine this. When I was in Atlanta, actually twice in the last 4 days, once for a PBS appearance to launch a new program, once for a lecture. All of the volunteers were from an AIDS organization, as it turns out. All of them, however, were very orthodox in viewing HIV as a killer and that AZT or one of the antiretroviral cocktails is the answer to this. During the breaks, while the program was playing and their phones were not ringing, I asked them their opinion. Did they view lifestyle as contributing to AIDS? The answer was no. Did they view changing their diet or cleaning, detoxifying? Again, the answer was no. So there were 14 of them, and I asked them to give me what their thoughts were on AIDS. And, of course, they were all pretty much the same. Once you've diagnosed HIV in your blood, then that means you're going to get AIDS. So I asked them, when they're testing your blood for AIDS, are they testing it for the virus? Yes. Not the antibodies? No. And I was rather surprised by this because I said, they've never tested. There's never even been the idea that they're testing for the virus. They're testing for the antibody to a virus. That seemed to have surprised these gay men. And I asked them, where are you getting your information on AIDS? Even Gallo, in his patent on his ELISA test, came from an antibody. No one's ever isolated the virus in blood of someone who has AIDS. That they didn't understand. And I realized how little information people have, hence the importance of this series. And when I shared the information, at least to the degree I could, it surprised them. Some of them simply didn't want to hear this information, thought it was just heresy, because it went against all that they had believed. And as one of them said, well, if you're right, Gary, then what you're saying is the way we've approached it, even with our loved ones, wasn't working, could have contributed to their death. And that struck home. People don't want to feel that they've in any way contributed to their loved ones dying because of inappropriate treatment. All the more reason to pay careful attention. There is one organization called Credence. Credence AIDS Update. It's a group of journalists and activists in England who have reviewed the world's literature every day to see what is going on, and they have challenged it. And they're the only such organization currently around that is doing this. And I have reviewed their information, and it's really a well presented, and their facts are substantially supported. So I'm going to start by telling what they're doing concerning their point on AIDS and how they see the rest of the world, and then I'll get into my own commentary. pregnancy and the HIV test. For our first item, we have included a leaflet highlighting the dangers of submitting to the wholly unscientific AIDS test. The leaflet will need reformatting for more professional look unless someone, and then they go on to talk about what they're doing here. Health warnings to expectant mothers. If you have recently become pregnant, you'll be recommended to take the HIV test as part of a standardized package care. In England, recommending the HIV test to all expectant mothers is now standard a procedure. The HIV test is highly inaccurate. It remains scientifically unproven and should be refused on the following grounds. One, all manufacturers of these tests include the following or similar disclaimer in with their test kits. Quote, at present, there is no recognized standard for establishing the presence or absence of antibodies to HIV 1 or 2 in human blood. Unquote. Mind you, that's what actually comes from the manufacturers of these test kits to the people taking them. Two, the reason for this disclaimer is because the AIDS test does not measure the presence of a virus. The AIDS test has been designed to detect levels of antibody activity in the blood. Antibody activity in the bloodstream is a normal occurrence in humans, but is being misrepresented by the AIDS test as indicating the presence of HIV, which it does not and cannot. As a result of this misinterpretation, healthy individuals are being wrongly diagnosed as HIV positive. Since this information has come to light, in excess of 60 different medical conditions have been recorded that can give you a false HIV positive reading. These separate conditions include flu, flu sticks, malaria, tetanus jabs, hepatitis A and B, hepatitis jabs. What they mean by a jab is a being stuck by a needle. Alcohol, drug use, recent viral infections from any virus, including Epstein-Barr, herpes, and even pregnancy itself will create antibodies. So receiving a spurious but wholly devastating diagnosis of HIV positive will prompt your doctor to recommend a course of anti-HIV drugs, known as protease inhibitors or antiretrovirals. These drugs are highly toxic. They have the well-documented capacity to harm the mother and also to severely deform and even kill the unborn child. Four, the current levels of spending on AIDS drugs in the Western world is phenomenal. So too are the profits enjoyed by the AIDS drug manufacturers. As a result, the information contained in this leaflet is largely being ignored by the orthodox medical establishment. Sadly, this is not an unexpected reaction. The pursuit of profit at the expense of health, the continued willful employment of flawed medical procedure, the administration of drained dangerously toxic drugs to expectant mothers, the disregard for the plight of thousands upon thousands of wrongly diagnosed people, and a refusal by the orthodox medical establishment to listen to sound contrary evidence or to admit medical negligence, all of these are the hallmarks of that once respected drug, thalidomide. Do not let you and your child face the possibility of becoming another heartbreaking medical statistic. And then they go on to talk about the how children are poisoned by this. They also have an interesting article that they have reported that, of course, you would not have seen anywhere in the United States. And it's called Natal Witness, AIDS by Any Other Name, October 19th, year 2000. I'll quote it. While cholera rages in Africa, about 43,000 South Africans die from diarrhea every year, more than from crime, political violence, motor accidents, and tuberculosis. About 40 people with diarrhea are treated at the Dodubia Clinic every month. Quote, almost all households around this area have no sanitation and water, and as a result, they suffer from diarrhea, explained Sister Diagala. Many people return within weeks for the same treatment. Just 2 weeks after ago, a child died of diarrhea and malnutrition, says the sister, who works at a Felony clinic in the South Coast. Because of the magnitude of the problem in the area, the church group is heading a group of primary health care field workers who teach the community about personal and environmental hygiene. And although government has put boreholes in some parts of the area, she said that even the water from borehole is not clean. Feces seeps into soil and water from boreholes, and then becomes contaminated. A sample of borehole water taken by a clinic contained fecal matter. And according to the Yuga North District Primary Health Care Co-Coordinator, said diarrheal diseases are especially prevalent in informal settlements. This is due to poor sanitation. Safe water remains a problem in the district. So she goes on to talk about most of the cases that they're seeing there. It's because the people don't have chlorine, they don't have pure water, and they should not boil the water because boiling is unreliable and they don't have money for fuel or wood for making a fire. And so what's happening is all these people in these settlements in South Africa are coming down with what are called AIDS-related illnesses, but they're not. They're not AIDS at all. Simply diarrhea and wasting disease from bad water. And then they have an article on it. There's an outstanding article by Patricia Nell Warren. And I think this really hits it right on the head, especially in Africa. I want to quote this verbatim. It was originally published in the ANU magazine in July of year 2000. Quote, earlier this year, South African President Mbeki, already known as an independent thinker, made world headlines when he sent hand-addressed letters about AIDS to President Clinton and UN Secretary General Kofi Annan and other world leaders. What grabbed the headlines was Mbeki's questioning whether Western approaches to AIDS theory and treatment were right for African countries. Mbeki defended his right to consult with AIDS dissenters. He asserted that, quote, it would constitute a criminal betrayal of our responsibility to our people, unquote, if his government did not explore all avenues of combating AIDS. According to the Washington Post, Mbeki, quote, stepped up an emotional controversy over his country's response to AIDS, saying Africa should chart their own course on this disease, unquote. Headlines also dwelled on Mbeki's invitation to several noted dissenters to participate in an AIDS advisory panel prior to the upcoming 13th International Conference on AIDS. According to the Washington Post, the White House tried to cover up Mbeki's letter. After all, Mbeki was upsetting apple carts for U.S. officials trying to squelch AIDS dissidents at home. The Post said, quote, the Clinton administration restricted distribution of the five-page letter, dated April 3rd, in an effort to prevent it from becoming public. Several Clinton administrative officials and foreign diplomats expressed dismay at Mbeki's decision to intensify what they see as a divisionary dispute and to bring it to a potentially volatile international forum. Amid the flap about dissent, the deeper message of Mbeki's simple, heartfelt prose and his deeper worry was missed by many Americans. U.S. outrage at Mbeki's position reflects our comfortable insulation from developing nations' concerns. It also expresses that old missionary streak that is still strong in this country, the idea that we know what's best for poor nations, that they should be abysmally grateful for our help. It's time for us to take off the missionary hat and look carefully at how developing countries may see AIDS politics. The fact is, Mbeki's letter followed a significant January 10th speech before the UN Security Council. This speech by the World Bank President James Wolferson used some very strong repositioning language. Wolferson said, quote, many of us used to think of AIDS as a health issue. We were wrong. AIDS can no longer be confined to the health or social sector portfolios. AIDS is turning back the clock on development, unquote. The World Bank, a group of international investment entities organized in 1944 to help rebuild the post-World War II world, is a major player in the AIDS debate. It is also a powerful economic driver in the world today. Americans who never gave a thought to the World Bank recently got their first look at its human faces on C-SPAN. Wolfson and other World Bank officials tried to explain their position to the TV cameras after anti-bank student and labor demonstrators had jarred Washington, D.C. for days and hundreds of arrests were made. The bank has now repositioned AIDS as its, quote, central developmental issue, unquote, even though malaria, tuberculosis, and malnutrition still kill far more people worldwide than AIDS. By the bank's own admission, malnutrition alone kills half of the children in low-income countries. The bank is deeply involved in financing and implementing AIDS-linked investment and singles out HIV-positive women for global focus. And yes, it is true that the death from any cause of a woman of childbearing age, with consequent loss of her income to her family and nurturing to her children, is a direct blow to a nation's development. Another big player in global U.S. AIDS policy is the United States. At the time of Becky's letter, the U.S. government was already the biggest contributor to the international AIDS efforts. Following Becky's letter, President Clinton went to Congress asking to double our international AIDS funding. The White House is using its own dire repositioning language, World War II languages, by calling it our Marshall Plan for AIDS. All the more reason why Americans need to think about this bank speech and to remind ourselves that the Security Council is a war forum. We need to look closely at what substituting a global war on AIDS for the old global wars on fascism and communism might portend for the world. Nor is scientific dissent about AIDS theory the only issue here. Mbeki's letter makes no secret of the fact that he is worried about developing countries losing their right to make their own decisions on health policy. The World Bank, along with the UN, World Health Organization, UNICEF, UNAIDS, and other international powers and agencies have already set a global AIDS policy in place that implies little choice, if any, by individual countries. Behind the ringing humanitarian rhetoric, what's happening is this. The original model of HIV law enforcement and public health policy that was first developed in the United States, the one that citizens of the U.S., Canada, and European countries are now required to submit to, is being applied to the rest of the world. Loans and investment for developing countries, perhaps even disaster relief, may be contingent upon a country's willingness to implement that HIV model within their own boundaries. For anybody who hasn't been reading the policy boilerplate of World Health Organization and the bank, this means mandatory HIV testing, individual surveillance and case reporting, and directly observed treatment, especially with women and children. Economic help may also be contingent on a country's willingness to allow mass marketing and foreign-made HIV vaccines and drugs and tests to its citizens. Global sales of AIDS drugs and tests and the AIDS vaccine that the World Bank says it wants for every child born on the planet, 10 billion of us, by the way, by the year 2050, surely have pharmaceutical companies glowing at the prospect of astronomical profits, even with the low prices required for selling these products to developing countries. The World Trade Organization wants millions of healthy workers and consumers who can be shuffled from country to country without diplomatic crisis revolving around contagious disease. More and more, the definition of world health centers on HIV negative. In other words, AIDS policy is now a key word commodity, right up there with shiploads of computers, crude oil, and wheat. Whenever this kind of global money leveraging is applied, truth and real human needs can get crushed beneath the lever. Worse yet, by linking every person on earth to a blood test or vaccination certificate for a disease that has been declared incurable, globalization of AIDS policy could leverage every human life on earth. Not having an HIV negative ID card could mean no job, no legal marriage, no benefits, no visa, no immigration. The one world folks can get this kind of leverage with the bigger killers like malaria, TB, and malnutrition, because a person can be effectively treated for those diseases. Leveraging countries on AIDS policy creates a clear danger of volatile reactions. Like South Africa, other developing countries may feel they have a right to independently thinking, especially on such an intimate issue as their citizens' sexual health. Failure by the U.S. or the World Bank to respect this right or insensitivity to cultural and religious parameters will surely raise some hackles. In fundamentalistic Islamic countries, for example, foreign vaccines and tests will probably not be welcomed by men on behalf of their women, who are kept strictly behind veils and closed doors. Indeed, at a couple of recent World Health conferences, there was violent wrangling among different religious groups over proposed global approaches to abortion, birth control, definitions of gender, and family values. Supposing a small country has declared a, quote, global health hazard because it refuses to toe the line on AIDS policy, will it be embargoed? Will it be nuked? Will it fail to get favored nation trade status with U.S.? Will the Security Council send in U.N. troops? Are we going to have Vietnams and Bosnias over AIDS? We could. Nor is the World Bank investment a magic bullet of economic success. The project coordinator of Resource Center of the Americas, Larry Weiss, recently ranked the Minneapolis Star Tribune for what it called the paper's gushing over World Bank structural adjustment programs. These, Weiss said, quote, require poor countries to impose harsh austerity measures on their populations and in turn their economies into sweatshop-based export platforms. Failure to do so can result in a cutoff of international credit, a catastrophe scenario for their economies. More than 90 countries have suffered structural adjustment, added Weiss. The Jubilee 2000 Coalition, comprising hundreds of faith-based and other organizations in more than 40 countries, that 7 million children die each year as a result of debt crisis. That is 5 million more deaths than the 2 million Africans said to die of AIDS each year, all because of World Bank politics. So what it means, quite simply, is the World Bank is killing 5 million children a year. 5 million. That blood is on the head of the World Bank. But does anyone care? No. Does anyone, any media in our country? Has Ted Koppel looked at it? Of course not. Nobody's paying attention. And as a result, we don't pay attention to the protest. And all we do is go along with things. So that's just to give you an idea of just what one journalist is saying. Now, let me summarize this just so you understand what it all means in lay language. It means that we have now taken AIDS from being a disease that affects a very tiny amount of individuals and has been declining for the last 10 years. And we broaden the definition of it so we can capture more people in it. And we do a unique kind of diagnosing of AIDS in Africa and Asia and South America. It is called presumptive diagnosis. It means you don't have to have your blood tested. You simply have to be suffering from wasting, diarrhea, non-productive cough. Now, then the moment you have those symptoms, you're said that you have AIDS. So when you go into South Africa, they say that 5 million people in South Africa are HIV positive, but they haven't tested 5 million people's blood. So how'd they come up with that figure? Well, simple. They went to the hospitals to see how many people in hospitals or villages have these symptoms. Now, here is the part where only a bureaucrat or someone who works under the Clintons or the World Health could appreciate. But you will see through this in a second. If you're living in Brooklyn or Queens or Bronx or in South Los Angeles, you're going to say, we're not going to be fooled. We can see this. But isn't it amazing? You can see it. They can't. They will say, we need one single standard in South Africa that every human being be given the HIV antibody test. Well, who's going to pay for that? They don't have the money. Well, of course, the World Bank would pay for it. Okay. Well, then how's it get its money back? Structural adjustment. What's that mean? It means that now where you may be able to use farmland for crops that you would eat and therefore supply your family or community or village with its vegetables and fruits and grains, nuts and seeds, can't do that anymore. It's got to be for an export crop. And where now you might have a school lunch program where kids are given one good meal a day that they can get at school, can't afford that. So all over the world, the kids are hit first. The World Bank has a proclivity for punishing children. It loves it. Must be on their resume. I hate children, make me president of the World Bank, because 5 million deaths are on the head of the World Bank for their structural adjustment programs. But do we look at that? Of course not. So when you take away the children's lunch programs and you, and a poor farmer, he needs some fuel. Now, up to this point, a country caring about its citizens would help subsidize the fuel. Let's say if fuel were to cost $2 a gallon, the government says, you pay 50 cents, we'll pay for the rest. That's a good policy. World Bank says, no, free market economy. Make them pay for the full $2 a gallon. You say, but these people are poor. They don't have the money. Too bad. We know best. We're in Washington, D.C. Look, come look at our $10 million building and look at all of our fancy suites. We've never been in a poor village. We don't have to. We're in a very rich suite. We make policy. We dictate. We're the new world order. Don't screw with us. We're the Rockefellers. And we know what the Rockefellers are capable of doing. Just look at their history. So now we take away their subsidy. And we are very specific people. We are the people who, like the Rockefellers, deem that it's their divine providence to rule. And they do. No one says boo. They've got their friends. They control bank loans, mergers, acquisitions, debt structuring. And they control, along with other bankers, the International World Bank. It's a coalition of bankers and the people that own those banks, which are these New Worlders. So now all it comes down to is a villager who at one time was poor but could grow enough food for their family. Now they can't. Because Monsanto comes in, and Monsanto can not only sleep in the White House, it can buy the White House. And it says, we've got a new suicide patented seed, meaning that you can only grow it once, can never grow it twice. So every year you have to buy it again. And you need water. And we own water rights. We bought the water rights in India. We're buying it all over the world. We're going to be the largest owner, private owner, of water rights. So if you want water to irrigate your plants, you've got to buy it from us. But the farmer says, but historically, I've always grown enough wheat that I hold over some of the grain so I can replant it next year. And I hold the beans and I can replant some beans. And we dry the tomatoes and take the tomato seeds so we can take the seeds to plant for next year. And now you're saying I can only plant one crop and only a crop that you give us. That's right. But I can't afford your crop. Well, you're lucky. You're lucky because your government has taken out a $5 billion loan from the World Bank to allow you to be able to have that crop. Now you've got seeds. But there's a payback. And the payback is you can't grow your millet, maize, corn. No, you can't. You've got to grow a very special type of single crop. We want you to grow soybeans to feed the meat. And so you're to grow the soybeans for export. So you grow soybeans. But they control the price that the soybean is sold at. That keeps you in poverty. You can't afford fuel. At one time, peanut oil, the primary oil used in Asia, was subsidized. Then they took away the price supports for it. Rice was subsidized. You were poor, but at least you could get a bag of rice to feed your family. They took away the price subsidies through structural adjustment. They took away your fuel subsidy. They levied higher taxes. And now you have to send your children off. Some children go and become prostitutes. Some work at labor that is throwback to the old child labor abuse in this century, at the beginning of the century. And then the World Bank, with a wink, nod, nod, all over Washington, 90,000 lobbyists who represent special interest groups, says, hey, now we can make sure that your shoe factory for your running shoes can open up without a hassle and without a problem. And guess what? Where you were located in the United States and you had to pay union wages and you had to have OSHA and you had to have workman's compensation and oversight, no more. You're going to be able to go into South Africa And we're going to pay, would a nickel an hour be okay? Yeah, a nickel an hour is fine. So you're going to be able to produce a sneaker that retails for $100 that cost you $1.50. We like that. We can work them 12 hours a day. They're not going to be given any benefits, no union. If they try to have a union, we can kill them, and we do. Break their bones, we do that. But we don't know how to kill them. No problem. We'll take them to the Schools of America, which is a very special school run through our intelligence agencies where we teach terrorism and interrogation and torture. All right, well, good. And then we make sure that there's no dispute because we will take back any land necessary. And then a small percentage of the profits will be used to pay back the loan to the World Bank. I see. So in essence, the World Bank is the largest Shylock in the world. Oh, yeah. Gives Shylock a bad name. So in other words, we go in with structural adjustment. We make everyone worse off than they were before. That's the whole point of the object they'll exercise. So we can then have it exploitable for any internationalist who wants to go in there and open up a cheap labor, no oversight, no unionization, no protection or safety for the workers. Now you got it. Well, the Washington Post could never figure that out. New York Times couldn't figure that out. Of course they couldn't. They graduated from college. Was somehow meant they lost their capacity for reasoning. So in other words, the guy on the street can figure this out. One big con, in a heartbeat, you're all up on it. You're exactly where it's at. So in other words, everywhere where the World Bank goes, death and destruction and instability occur everywhere. Everywhere. The evidence is overwhelming. So they're responsible for countries becoming so poor that 5 million children died of structural adjustment. That's right. That's mass murder. Yeah. Yeah. That's a genocide of children. But they'll be rewarded for it. That's the nice thing about being a part of any international movement. GATT, NAFTA, you're rewarded, not punished. You get more power. So in other words, the hook that we can use to make all this happen is we can make the world seem that we're all going to die of AIDS, and Africa must toe the line, and so they must get mandatory testing, and we'll make sure they can afford the inaccurate test that can cross-react to diseases they normally have, so that even if they did test positive by a blood test instead of some presumptive diagnosis, because they already have malaria and tuberculosis and pregnancy itself, that everyone's going to be tested, and therefore we have a market of, what, 300 million people? Yeah. Well, let's say a test normally costs $100. What if we charge $25, since the actual test would only cost us about a dollar? Then you're looking at billions, tens of billions of dollars could be made. Well, that's just good. It's good for the World Bank. Because it gets to put his favorite friends that no one's ever investigated, no one's ever exposed, who are the friends and interlocking board members, and what companies are they associated with, and how they've gone into every country that they have created a structural adjustment program to make sure that they have, in effect, they're the Normandy beachhead. They hit those countries so hard with structural adjustment that everybody says, ouch, and everybody shuts up when multinational companies go in to exploit for coal, bauxite, diamonds, whatever it is that they're wanting to exploit. They get that labor, they get the land, they get concessions, they get everything, as if they're the rulers, the new rulers. And the people just suffer. That's how it works. Couldn't be that simple. It is. It is. And you can't challenge the facts. The facts are what they are. All you can do is try to reconfigure them. Get a smooth-talking pathological personality, and they'll talk you into believing that we have an AIDS epidemic when we don't. So in other words, when you're in South Africa, if you were to test all of the whites, they don't have AIDS. That's correct. If you tested the affluent blacks, they don't have AIDS. That's correct. If you tested the educated blacks, they don't have AIDS. That's correct. So in other words, as long as they have good, clean water and lots of food and they have medicines to help them if they should get some infection, they're healthy, and therefore they're not a part of the AIDS statistic. But when you go to these villages where they're dying of diarrhea, which we can prove, and dying of malnutrition, and dying of cholera, we're calling it all AIDS. That's what we're calling it. So then we say that we have an AIDS epidemic, and therefore we need money for AIDS. So what we're going to do to fight the war on AIDS is we're going to bring in the pharmaceutical company like Glaxo Welcome, and we're going to make sure that every citizen gets a vaccine.
Yeah.
And that everyone who has the diagnosis of AIDS will get a immune suppressive, absolutely going to possibly kill them, drug like AZT, one of the most notorious drugs in history, and someday will find its place as the worst drug ever created, even surpassing thalidomide. That is correct. But it'll be subsidized. So then everybody can say, we're helping stop AIDS by giving the medications they need. So we're not going to give them food or clean water or give them sustainable agriculture or stop the social, the civil wars or rebuild their homes or give them meaningful work or give them a living wage. That we're not going to do. But we're going to sell them a drug. And we're going to pay for the drug through loans through the World Bank, but charge the country by putting our people in favored corporate positions in there to run their corporations, whatever they want to do, and exploit the labor force and exploit anything else they want to. And all the while, as people die, they will say that, well, they didn't die because of the drug we gave them, that's immunosuppressive. They died because the AIDS was too far. And all over Africa, the only people who are diagnosed as AIDS are poor people. So where we once said that AIDS in Africa was a disease that was infective, we now have to say, it's so smart, this AIDS, and we can get that. And Ted Koppel can have Robert Gallo on, and Exeter, and who, and everybody will believe him because nobody challenges him. And they'll say, it's a new adaptive genetic strain of HIV that is so smart that it only attacks dumb people. So then, yes, if you haven't been to school and you're considered dumb, then you're susceptible to AIDS. But if you've been to school and you're educated and you have a job, then it won't attack you. So somehow the virus stops right before it goes into your body. It stops midair. And I can just kind of see Ted kind of looking off into space like Alfred E. Newman saying, I got that. And then it stops and it reads you. There's some kind of psychic reading says, this person is too educated for me to get in their body. And then they go to another person and says, but this person hasn't graduated from school and is a poor person living in a poor neighborhood. That's who I should infect. And we'll have people from, we'll have Jeff Greenwald. Now there's an intellect. Yeah, right. And he'll say, and we're doing a lot on AIDS. Yeah, and a smart variant, always new variant. That's the way to get around it. No one will stop and say, well, hold on a second. There's no such creature. An infectious illness attacks everyone equally. How your body responds to it is based upon your immune response. These people already have a defective immune system. But it doesn't attack everyone. And it never has attacked everyone. But there's where politics, greed, closed-mindedness, selfishness, a vacuous intellectual concept are able to create an epidemic that doesn't exist. And they're getting away with it. Someday, someone's going to have a courage to expose the people behind the World Bank and what it has done. For those of us who've researched it, for those of us who know the truth, we don't have a forum outside of these to present this information, which means it will not make changes. Now, here's an article from Stephen Ranson from Credence Publications. The inaccuracy of HIV tests spells potential disaster for Argentina and South Africa. World Diagnostics Incorporated concedes weaknesses in its latest HIV smart test. A quick and easy HIV diagnostic tool known as the smart test is the latest product being vigorously promoted by World Diagnostics, Inc. The company's webpage includes the following headlines. WDI's HIV test approved by Argentina government and South African government validates HIV rapid test. We anticipate that the SA business will add significantly WDI's revenue and growth over the next 12 months. Shipments are to begin in October, supply more than 500 government-run clinics with a rapid HIV diagnostic test. Confident corporate statements, these well may be. Privately, however, Dr. Martin May, the technical advisor of affairs vice president of this company, is not so confident. In a series of email correspondences, what he has admitted to Credence personnel spells potential medical disaster for the South Africa and other recipient nations, the latest, quote, smart test, unquote. Before examining Dr. May's statements in more detail, let us briefly examine the inherent weakness fundamental to all HIV predictor kits. Let the reader be assured that a medical background is not necessary in order to grasp the key elements to the AIDS test controversy. In no instance does any HIV test measure the presence of a virus. The test measures only raised levels of antibody activity in the blood sample supplied. Raised levels of antibody activity are a normal occurrence in the blood and indicate primarily a well-functioning immune system. Scientific literature records in excess of 60 separate medical conditions that can raise sufficient levels of antibody activity in the blood to trigger a false positive reading. These separate testing for HIV, it goes on to talk about what this actually means as far as the, let me go to the next page. This can mean the flu, malaria, tetanus, hepatitis, renal failure, hemophilia, organ transplant, alcohol use, drug use, meaning if you had a glass of whiskey or you had a glass of beer and you were tested for the HIV antibody test, you could test positive and your life goes on downhill just for having beer because you wouldn't have the HIV virus in your body. You'd have a reaction that they're going to say is an antibody reaction when it's just a reaction to the alcohol. You could use any drug, heroin, cocaine, and then they test you, they'd say, you're HIV antibody positive. No, you're crack positive, heroin positive, cocaine positive. Boy, wouldn't that be something if they start testing everyone on Wall Street? Suddenly you'd have a 99% increase in AIDS just from Wall Street. Recent viral infection. So if you just had a cold, if you had the flu, and you're going to get an antibody test for HIV, you could test positive. And if you test positive, here's the bad news. The new federal program under Commander-in-Chief Clinton, and mind you, he's the Commander-in-Chief, and he's made AIDS a national security issue, which makes it a war issue. He's saying, and part of that policy is saying, that you have to be monitored for compliance. Now, what does that mean? What it means is this. If you're shown to have the HIV antibody, which has never been shown, but we'll get to that on an upcoming program, you will then be forced to take, you have no choice, you'll be forced under supervision every day to take the drugs. The fact that you'll be dying because of this will not be their blame. They'll say, we're trying the best we can to help you. And you're going to be saying, I was healthy. I just had a cold. I thought it was no big deal. I never questioned government policy on anything. And then they gave me this test that I was positive, and now you say I've got HIV, and now you're giving me these AZT drugs and protease inhibitors, and I'm feeling rotten, and I'm throwing up, and my hair's falling out, and I've got anemia, and I've got intestinal bleeding, and my bone marrow suppression, and now I've got all other kinds of infections because I have no immune system to fight. Can I stop? And they'll say, no. No, you can't. You must take it every day, and if you fail to, you'll be jailed. We also have to know every person you've ever had sex with, because that's part of the new criteria. If you're HIV positive, you must inform every person, who then must be forcibly tested. And then they, in turn, must go under the treatment. And they must also tell about everyone else they've had sex with. Didn't know that, did you? Well, that's part of what's going on. Misinterpretation. Men, women, and children across the world are being wrongly diagnosed as HIV positive. Quite shockingly, the above anomalies are well known to the major manufacturers of HIV test kits, and all leading brands carry with them a statutory disclaimer. The Abbott Laboratories AXSYM test, for instance, contains the following wording, quote, "At present, there is no recognized standard for establishing the presence or absence of antibodies, HIV 1 or 2, in human blood," unquote. Well, that would seem to indicate that the test they're telling us to take has no scientific value whatsoever. That's correct. So that's neat. Let's just think of that for a moment. You can tell someone to take a test. You can make it mandatory for people to take a test that the test maker says is worthless. That's correct. So after taking a worthless test, and you could have 60 different conditions, including arthritis, including measles, including flu, and you test positive, you've not tested positive for HIV. You've tested positive for antibodies to these other conditions that test will read as HIV antibody positive because there's no gold standard. That is correct. Then they'll take a completely healthy person and put them on a drug that will kill them. Yes, that'll happen. Doesn't make sense. No, it doesn't. But surely there's someone of enlightenment somewhere. No, there's not. Not in any government position. You don't see enlightened people working for government agencies. You've got independent doctors, but no one's going to threaten their independence if they're getting government grants, because you're only going to get grants if you agree with their position of what causes and what to treat the disease with. Well, then universities, no? Universities get most of their money now from the government and from private industries that have a profit incentive in the war on AIDS. Go against it, you won't get funded. You have to be a rather sterling example of an autonomous person within the scientific community to withstand the type of challenge that will come to you. In spite of that, every day, more and more scientists from the mainstream medical community, scientific community, and the academic community are coming forward saying, we've gotten it all wrong. Well, then why don't we hear about them? Because they have no forum to make that. How many of them are there? Well, 5 years ago, there were under 15. Today, there are over 3,000. And it's growing. Within a year from now, after I release my documentary, Deconstructing the Myth of AIDS, and the largest, most comprehensive book ever written on AIDS, which I'm writing now, which is done, actually. It's been sent out to 100 people for pre-publication criticism. I want them to try to find where I'm wrong. I've sent it to people who are orthodox in every way, and I say, show me where any statement of my book is wrong. Maybe they will. If they will, then I'll try to disprove myself even more until they can't find me wrong, and then I'll release the book. But I think after that book comes out, after my documentary comes out, and the international press conference I'm going to be having sometime in the late spring, I think we'll have probably 10 or 15,000 scientists and possibly some journalists on board. But the journalists are the last to give up their ego about being wrong. They'd hate to go back into print or broadcast and say, you know, saying, I'm sorry, we caused the death of a lot of people by supporting an orthodox view that should have been challenged. A child could have seen through it, and we didn't. They'll be the last to surrender their ignorance. But at least it is growing. So when you look at that, you're saying, well, this is all crazy. This is crazy. Yet is. Just like the doctor who sent me a 12-page memo about how his life has been virtually destroyed. Mainstream Orthodox physician here in New York City. Got it last week. Spoke to him on the phone because he got the flu vaccine. No, the hepatitis vaccine. As mandatory in his hospital. And it just wrecked his immune system. Totally healthy for all these years. Destroyed him. And he can't get anyone to acknowledge it. And he sent me a letter saying, I used to think a lot of things you were saying were just unsupportable. He said, but now I'm the victim of what you were talking about, and my God, are you right on? So what is he now? He's going to become an activist, using his position within the Orthodox mainstream medical community and being a victim of what he had victimized others in being, to speak out on these issues, especially on vaccine. But now we're talking about, it's only a matter of time, probably the next 2 to 3 years at the most, before they finally claim that they have an AIDS vaccine. They'll start it in Africa. Now, of course, you cannot vaccinate against something that's not there. How could you vaccinate against 30 different diseases, like cervical cancer in women? You can't. But they'll be able to get billions of dollars out of that. And, of course, they'll be protected by a Vaccine Injury Compensation Act that will limit how much you could sue for damages. But they'll say that they have to put the AIDS virus in your body to create. That's the whole purpose of a vaccine. How many people are going to want to have an HIV if they ever could isolate such a thing, which they to date have not, back in a person's body? I think that is worth considering. It's all about politics and money at this point. It has nothing to do with the disease. To make matters worse, those manufacturers advise that the confirmation of these tests can be arrived at only by employing at least two other independent tests and not their own. This is an excellent example of passing the buck, transferring ultimate responsibility and potential litigation difficulties onto a test product conveniently outside of their own manufacturing stable. To compound the issue, the independent confirmatory test advised by these manufacturers all carry a similar disclaimer. Thus, a test admitting that it cannot determine the presence of HIV is being corroborated by two other equally imprecise antibody detection tests that also say they cannot corroborate it. In simple terms, a positive reading from any of these tests carries little or no diagnostic value. What comfort, then, for the thousands upon thousands of individuals who have been diagnosed HIV positive vis-a-vis these tests. Their lives have been quite needlessly ruined. Those who are battling for these simple facts to reach the wider public domain will know that the inaccurate nature of the HIV test represents only a small portion of the inconsistencies in the HIV/AIDS debate, the global phenomena that is increasingly becoming known as the greatest medical fraud of the 20th and 21st centuries. And in the case of the World Diagnostic International, when the gloss is stripped away, the 100% accuracy it so confidently trumps for its smart test is completely untrue. The company's 100% accuracy statement was arrived at by, quote, confirming their test with the Abbott AXSM system, the Pasteur-Sanofi ELISA system, and then by the Western Blot Analysis. The Abbott AXSYM system we already know about with regard to the Pasteur-Sanofi product, and Mr. Porter from Biorad UK, a subsidiary of the organization which has since bought out the Pasteur-Sanofi, admitted that illnesses such as malaria, typhoid, and TB could show positive on their test. He admitted also that their kit should not be used as confirmation of a positive result. Mr. Potter further stated that, as yet, no company has any diagnostic tool that will accurately predict HIV positive status. Concerning the validity of the Western blot test, head of the UAK Public Health Laboratory Services, Dr. Philip Mortimer, has admitted that this test is not appropriate for use in confirmatory diagnoses, testing for HIV, which has abandoned the use of Western blot. Now, considering these factors and the extent to which this company is now contributing to worldwide HIV testing procedure, Credence Publication approached the new company under the assumed name of Protect Diagnostics and posed some delicate questions with regard to the possibility of false HIV positives being delivered by their smart test. Dr. Mu is the technical advisor, affairs vice president of this new company and a former senior product development manager of Pharmacu Corporation, and engaged previously by such companies as BPL, I'm not sure which one that is, Schering Plow, Ortman Biomedics, admitted to us the possibility of false positives, stating, quote, the disclaimer false positive means that this rapid device, as any other rapid device in the market, might show a positive result on certain samples coming from patients with other diseases, i.e. autoimmune diseases, or with high amounts of nonspecific antibodies, as happens to some diseases, unquote. When we ask how this new test could possibly be validated by tests that themselves were equally unspecific, Mu could offer no guarantees and reply, quote, "I have to be honest with you, our rapid tests have the same drawbacks as the ELISA test," unquote. In their thousands, their new tests are now heading for parts of the world where the prevalent illnesses are TB, malaria, cholera, poor sanitation, poverty-related diseases all elicit high levels of antibody activity in their bloodstream. The potential for misdiagnosis is rife. Simple medications for simple illnesses will be overlooked as thousands of false positive diagnoses for HIV will occur. These misdiagnosed unfortunates will then be fed the country's generic versions of the latest AIDS drugs, in themselves highly toxic and having the well-documented capacity to bring about immune-destroying illnesses and eventually death. More than likely, they will then go on to die, a death that will quite wrongly be categorized as, quote, death from AIDS. We then ask how anyone could accurately and with full peace of mind pronounce an HIV positive status upon anybody. Dr. Mu replied, quote, "Regarding your question, I personally would not be satisfied with a rapid test, nor with the ELISA test that comes to a matter of ethics," unquote. So one is bound to ask, where are ethics to do the test at this company? At the time of writing, the latest headline on their webpage announces a, quote, "AIDS catastrophe, quote, set to engulf Russia." Having calculated the population of this vast continent, and despite the unnecessary misery, suffering, and death this test and their naive purchasers may cause, it seems the World Diagnostic Incorporated are now set to clean up north as well as south. From Stephen Ranson, Credence Publications. Isn't it amazing that something that could be impacting malnutrition, gross poverty, hepatitis, massive infections are all over Russia? Russians' health have plummeted in the last 11 years because of our interference and bringing a free market economy that so shocked them that now they can't get subsidies for rent, food, heating, nothing. And so they're starving to death. And now, once again, the World Bank will go in and say, sure. And the World Trade Health Organization, yes. And the UN, yes, let's help Russians. And on the nightly news, yes, major, major improvement. We're going to go in to help them. And I'll take these sickly people and give them an accurate blood test, which will show that they, quote, have AIDS, the antibody, and then be given the drugs, all subsidized. They don't have AIDS. They have what a vaccine cannot prevent and a medicine cannot cure. They have economy in free fall, and they're the consequence of it. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you for listening to today's program. Continuation of our series on AIDS, a Second Opinion, Deconstructing the Myth. I'll see you tomorrow.